I'm Christopher Lydon with the novelist Nicholson Baker, who does it all, starting with The Mezzanine, about a lunch hour trip to buy shoelaces. He wrote Vox, the phone sex book that Monica Lewinsky gave to Bill Clinton, but also Human Smoke, a pacifist history of World War II. His new one, Traveling Sprinkler, is another stream of preoccupations in the head of a 50-something white American guy like himself. But the novel is different, and so is our conversation. Lean into this one, please, and listen to the sound of a writer's mind in the silence of a Quaker meeting in Kittery, Maine. Also, in the anti-war songs that he's driven to write, record, and mix in the modern mode on his own computer. Baker's hero in Traveling Sprinkler is a poet named Paul Chowder, who fantasizes that he's a radio guy and a podcaster, the ingratiating host of the Paul Chowder Radio Hour. This is what he sounds like.
Hello and welcome to the Paul Chowder Hour. I'm your host, and I hope by this time that I'm your friend. And I want you to know something. When you have me as a friend, you have somebody you can count on. If you need help, I'll be there. Like if you need me to help you dig in some bulbs or water your tomatoes or carry your groceries or tend your chickens, I can do that. The only thing I can't do is I can't call you up and be hearty and affectionate and cheerful if you're mortally ill. That I can't do. I've done it several times, but I don't do a good job of it because when I know somebody's dying, it's just so sad and awful that I can't pretend that it's not. He's fascinated by podcasts and by the fantasy of having a radio show. I've always loved the radio. I mean, NPR is the greatest thing on the planet. It's just, there's nothing better than listening to an intelligent radio show, really, I've always thought. And my guy, Paul, is maybe a little too reclusive or something for that, but he fantasizes about having a show. Greetings, this is Chowder's Poetry Slurp, and I'm here to welcome you to another show in which we talk about the world of freelance hydroponics. I'm Paul Chowder, your harbor master, confidant, and co-conspirator, and I hope that you will all sit back and close your eyes and just let the poetry wash over you. Just let it pass over you in a lethal tide of poetical merriment. You are the sunken cathedral, my friend. This is PRI, Public Radio International. He starts off with the exciting idea that he is, in fact, a radio host. And by the end of it, he's back in confessional mode, you know, not being a radio host, just being a confessional poet of a certain sort. It ends up kind of dissolving in the narrative of him trying to tell the truth about his life, and he forgets that he's, you know, on the air. My hero in Traveling Sprinkler is just a poet who wants to, you know, write some good poems, maybe, or maybe write a song that goes with a poem, and wants to get back with his girlfriend. And then you have to think, well, how do you talk about that if you are actually engaged in trying to write something that's a novel, that has the texture of actual life? The way you have to do it is have these little thoughts, these little fragments of remembered history come surging into a person's mind as he's sitting in his car, you know, smoking a cigar. In fact, one of the things that my hero does is he gets interested in smoking cigars because he finds that, man, they are powerful. Why has nobody told him about this incredible thing called tobacco that just goes right to your head? He's smoking a Nicaraguan cigar. And he suddenly thinks, wait, I don't know. But it's Nicaragua. This is the same. It's called an Esteli Nicaraguan cigar. The best tobacco is grown in this place, Esteli. Well, that's a place where there were terrible atrocities that American government was involved, of course, in Nicaragua. So when we were intervening, there was all this suffering. Now we're no longer intervening. What are they doing? They're doing something reasonably peaceable. They're growing tobacco that our hero can sit in a car and smoke. I mean, that is the little way that big pieces of history can flow into an individual life.
Your man Chowder sits in his car. He also sits, and I wish you'd take us there, in a Quaker meeting in Kittery, Maine, as you locate it. I love that. I love his silence. I love his reflection. I love his the suspense. And then I love what is said eventually. Can you get us there?
Well, I go to Quaker Meeting a fair amount. The suspense is that it is. The convention is that the normal state is that nobody is saying anything, but it's by consent. And it's an expectant silence, right? It's something that, and I always feel like an outsider. There are two levels of Quakerism. You can either be a member of a Quaker meeting or an attender. And an attender is just somebody who goes, and I'm an attender. I'm not a theistic, godly kind of person, so I'm always sort of intimidated by that. But the suspense is, who is going to say something? And what are they going to say? And there's this ticking clock. And the windows in the summertime, which is when my novel's set in the summer, the windows are open, and the air, the car sounds that come through the whole meeting, just sort of travel through the meeting, and go out the door. And there's just this feeling of being permeated by openness and sitting, and the clock is very loud. One of the most dramatic things that ever happened in Quaker meeting, actually, in real life, was the clock stopped. It just suddenly stopped ticking. It was a very big moment. And then the suspense is, they say something. It's a fragment. It's an observation. It's something terrible that happened or something beautiful that happened. And it just hangs there in the air of the meeting. And you can just feel it, the kind of, I guess, the billiard balls of this thing kind of caroming around other people's minds. Then somebody else stands and completes that thought or takes it a different way. And I have never been anywhere else where this way of where people have been intelligent, humbly intelligent as a group in quite the same way as the Quakers in the Quaker meeting that I go to have been. They've taught me so much. And always at the end of meeting, I leave kind of staggered by it and feeling that something good has happened to me, and that I may be even a slightly better person. I've been very fortunate to be there. And then I find that I sit and I have things to say because I haven't been able to say anything for an hour. When I was a kid, I used to watch drag races, and I was just transfixed when the lights would go down red, 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 green. And as the lights were still red, the drag racing tires would start to spin around frantically and the smoke would rise, but they still had their brakes on because they weren't allowed to go. And it feels sometimes like that in meeting. You cannot say anything because the convention is silent. And whatever you have to say is unworthy of speech right then because it's too raw. Sometimes I have something that I want to say, and I think I'll say it this meeting, and then I realize it's not cooked enough. And maybe I come back the next time, and I think, no, I'm too shy, it's not right. Maybe three or four meetings go by, and then I finally think, this is the right moment to say it. One thing that I really wanted to say for several meetings was this line that my wife actually showed me from a newspaper article. Once our eyes are opened, we can't pretend we don't know what to do. That's all it is. Once our eyes are opened, we can't pretend we don't know what to do. It just knocked me out. I remember reading it with her, and we both looked at each other going, oh my God. And I finally stood up and said that I had read this thing, and that it was, and I tried to talk about why it was true and the times when it isn't true, because sometimes our eyes are open and we still don't know what to do. And then I liked it so much that I actually set it to music.
This is part of the drama of Traveling Sprinkler, which is, can Paul Chowder write modern music with the modern technology? Will it serve him? Can he master the tricks, the computers? As you were writing this, I presume, I was listening and enjoying your commentaries in song on YouTube, and this is something new. But what's the moral?
Well, it certainly was helpful to me. I thought I had these things that I wasn't happy about, and I thought, well, work them into song, that the sentiment, which is absolutely obvious and simple would be furthered by the fact that I was, you know, floating on the received wings of you know, centuries of harmony. So as I was writing this book, I was also writing a set of songs. So there are 12 songs by Paul Chowder that are published as part of the anthology, but at the end of it, it has an album of 12 songs, and one of them is called The Right of the People. In the book, Paul's friend Tim says, look, what we need is something to sing at the barricades. We need an anthem. We need something that people can respond to, you know, a great protest song. So, you know, I'm not a great composer, but I thought, okay, let me try to do that and try to have my character do that. So I came up with this song, The Right of the People.
The right of the people to carry their signs, stand in a crowd, walk in a line. The right of the people to meet in a park, shout their words, to do no harm.
I'd watched all these horrible YouTube videos with people getting sprayed with pepper spray, and right in there, you know, where they're just sitting in the road. And I boiled down the crucial phrases of the amendment to the Constitution: peaceably to assemble, to petition for redress. And they just suddenly struck me as so pure and so beautiful and so, I don't know, just so concise. Peaceably to assemble, to petition for redress. You know, those ancient words.
Peaceably to assemble, to petition for redress.
Peaceably to assemble, to petition.
So I sang those words, and then I thought, I also have to sing, once our eyes are opened, we can't pretend we don't know what to do. So I sang that too, and I put this in, so it's in a song, and I tried to harmonize my own voice as much as possible.
Once our eyes are open, we can't pretend we don't know what to do.
So it's in the written book, but it's also in the, it's also as exists as a song, and I did the best I could with it.
And it's not a joke.
No, the songs are no joke. I mean, it's not. I'm not being ironic with these songs. I've never done anything that in which I feel more vulnerable to my own failings and inadequacies. It's hard to sing because when you sing as a writer, you have lots of little squirrely black shapes on the page to hide behind. And it's of course very open and confessional, but it's also, you have that nice scrim. You're behind this shield of the 26 letters. But when you sing the words with your own voice, with all of its imprecisions and its desire to go down and to lose the pitch and all that stuff, it is so naked and so frightening. I feel more vulnerable in doing those songs actually than in anything else I've ever done. Music is so instantly graspable and yet so mysterious and so subtle and complicated, and there's a slight change of harmony or a choice of doubling up of orchestra of a particular instrument, of adding of a little reverb. All these things can change us the texture of a moment so much, and yet they are beyond, all of them are entirely beyond speech. There's no way you can codify or even talk about them verbally, so they're in that way puzzling, but also just so entertaining, because what they're trying to do is, all you're trying to do if you're writing a song is make something beautiful in some way, at least something that someone can tap his or her foot to, maybe dance around the room, sing along with, that someone will respond to in a positive way.
Paul Chowder, Nicholson Baker, you're an ornament to the podcasting industry, shall we say. It's always a one-of-a-kind pleasure, Nick, to catch up with this stream of thought.
Chris, it's just a pleasure to be part of this project that you're doing, and you started it all, so I learned a lot from what you did and threw it in a novel.
I was just a little bug on the broad shoulders of Dave Weiner, but we did do the first podcast, and it's barely 10 years ago.
Think of the word podcast and how it's now just a word that we throw around.
So I say to Dave Weiner, between us, Dave, we were the Neil Armstrong on the podcast moon, and now everybody goes there, and it is fun.
It is. It's a giant leap.
Thank you, Nick Baker.
Thanks, Chris.
Mary McGrath produced and edited this conversation with Nicholson Baker. His new novel, the second in the voice of Paul Chowder, is called Traveling Sprinkler, making its circuitous path around the green landscape of his obsessions. You can find the music he's making in this novel and in our conversation on YouTube under Nicholson Baker Protest Songs. And of course, you're invited to leave a comment on all of it at our website, radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Lydon. Thank you for being part of the Open Source Podcast Project.
The right of the people to carry their signs, stand in the crowd, walk in the line. The right of the people to fill the streets, to share their sorrows and cry for peace. No chain link, no pepper spray.